is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, a good time right now to give us a call at 1-800-462-7413. And as per usual, Zorba, along with our great callers, some interesting topics to talk over.
Yes, we're going to talk about women. When they pump it up, they often pump up the music too. And the real question is, are they doing damage to their ears listening to loud music that's spurring them to exercise more and more and more?
Yeah. And?
Medical marijuana, it's being considered in a number of states. It's illegal in 12 states. What are the benefits? What are the cons? What is the take on this? And should it be legalized in more states across the country?
Oh, interesting stuff. And a good recipe.
Yes, veggie and ham stir fry. It's a recipe from the vault that people loved.
And we had one really, really funny email when this was on the first time, and we'll talk about that too. Don't forget our medical myth busters coming up later on in the hour. To the phones we go, Zorba, and our first caller, a listener with us now in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba. Hi, Tom.
How can we help you?
Well, I have a strange thing that started to happen. About 2 months ago, I developed out of nowhere kind of an eye muscle twitch on the bottom part of my eyelid, and it comes and goes. It doesn't debilitate my sight, but it is driving me insane.
I would imagine very irritating.
Yes.
How often does it occur when you have it? Is it a number of times during the day or?
Yeah, I would say typically during the course of the day, it's happening once or twice, and usually in really convenient times, like when I'm in a meeting with a client.
Ooh. Well,
in a meeting with a client, what sort of work do you do?
So I work in financial services, so it's talking about very serious topics, and then I'm usually reaching for my eye, thinking if I touch it, it will stop, which isn't usually the case.
That sounds like a nervous thing, doesn't it? Sir?
Well, I'll tell you something. If I had a twitchy eye and I were in front of a client, my eye started twitching, I certainly would get nervous. Yeah. It sounds like something you see in a movie.
But it sounds
all of a sudden you twitch.
Like a stress thing when you're in a stressful situation.
I don't think so. Are you in a stressful situation? Does it only occur over stress?
You know, I originally thought that was the case, but it's not. It will start up any time of the day.
Hmm. Any time of the day. Okay, so any time it'll all of a sudden happen. Allergies. Do you have any allergies at all?
I am the queen of allergies. I have a severe peanut allergy. I'm allergic to cats, sulfur-based drugs. So, and especially food. I've developed more food sensitivities as I've gotten older.
I love it. The queen of allergies. The queen of allergies. I'm going to have to use that line somewhere. I don't know where it will fit in. Now, eye drops. What have you tried? Have you tried anything at all?
I've tried nothing.
Oh, nothing.
I do wear contact lenses. I don't know if that makes a difference.
Okay. First of all, twitching can be from a variety of things. The original, there's something called blepharospasm, and Botox, which undoubtedly you've heard about, originally was actually developed for severe blepharospasm, where people have these muscle twitches, and they actually inject the area about the lid to keep the lid from twitching. That's not what you have, but I mention it because that's sort of people who have severe twitching. But quite often, twitching is due to some inflammation on the conjunctiva. The conjunctiva is this clear covering on front of the eye, and it can be injected. That's when your eye is red. It can be swollen. There are a number of things that occur on the conjunctiva about the eye. So one of the things you can do is the first thing I would try is an over-the-counter eye drop. Now, the ones I would recommend are, there's one called Vasocon A, V-A-S-O-C-O-N, Vasocon A, and the other one is Nafcon, N-A-F-C-O-N, Nafcon A. And these used to be prescription eye drops, and they're antihistamine eye drops that work really, really well. The chances are this eye drop, either one or the other, is going to probably do the trick. And one burns actually a little bit, and often that burn makes you feel good. It's kind of like itching. Mm-hmm. If that fails, you may need a prescription eye drop, one called Acular, which is an anti-inflammatory eye drop that uses something similar to ibuprofen, actually, in the eye. And then if that doesn't work, there are a few few others. Pantenol is another one. But I think you ought to go to the eye drop. Try the over-the-counter first and see what that does. And then the other thing is to figure out, does it occur in certain times? Like, is there something that you're touching that you're allergic to? You know, a paper or ink or pen or something like that. But I try the eye drops first.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And good luck with your job. I hope your job goes well so you don't twitch in front of clients.
Well, it's been a very exciting couple of years. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for the call at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, here's a listener now in Norman, Oklahoma. Hello.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I'm calling actually because I'm part of the distinguished group of women called advanced maternal age mothers. And I have two little boys, and I had heard recently that there's a connection between the mother's age at the time of conception and the lifespan of those children.
Wow.
And I was wondering if Dr. Zorba had ever heard of that or if there's any medical basis for that.
Yeah, how advanced maternal age are you?
Well, I was 35 at conception of my first son and 36 when I had him, and I'm now 38, and I have now a three-month-old as well.
You know, it's kind of interesting. When I started medicine, we had medicalized childbirth to a great degree, too much of a degree. And women were placed on IVs, and you never had anyone else in the delivery room. Sort of Western medicine had really captured a childbirth. And then we had a very important movement of Lamaze and other movement of making sure that delivering a baby was really more humane. But then we medicalized it again by saying, well, you're of advanced maternal age at the age of 35. And the fact is, I think that's a hokum way of talking about it. I don't like that as a concept. Now, we do know there's certain things that you should have at 35 because the risk of Down syndrome increases dramatically at the age of 40. But there's really no evidence that your baby is going to have a decreased lifespan at all from the age of 35. There is evidence that older eggs of women often are harder. It's harder for women to get fertile at that time. There may be other things that occur within the pregnancy because you're older, but I don't think there's any evidence at all that it affects the longevity of your child. And the concept of advanced maternal age is sort of, you know, it's such an unsexy word, you know. I'm of advanced maternal age. Tom and I were both looking at each other and thinking, was she like 50? Yeah. Is that advanced maternal age? Now, I want to tell you a bit about it. I have four perfect children. Our fourth one was Penny was 39 or 40 at the age of conception, and the others were right around 35 at all. And she never thought of herself as advanced maternal age until we got to the soccer field, when some of the parents in the soccer field were as old as we could have been if we had kids at the age of 18. Yeah. So on the soccer field, I think advanced maternal age is okay, but in the doctor's office, I don't like that term. I don't like that term.
What about once you're over 40?
Over 40, one of the issues are genetic defects. And over the age of 40, as you get to 40, I don't remember exactly what the numbers are, but around 40, the risk of having a Down's child is increases dramatically, starting at the age of 35, and then at the age of 40, it increases there too. But of course, that's what amniocentesis is about. You know, you make decisions. You make a decision of amniocentesis to find out if you have a genetic defect such as a Down's child, and then you make a decision with you and your physician. That's essentially what women do over the age of 35 and especially over the age of 40, and it's a very individual decision that's important. And there are other issues, once again, with how you're going to, carry the child. And there are other birth defects that are a little bit more common, but shouldn't stop you from having a baby. You're an older mom. You don't have advanced maternal age. Good luck.
Well, great.
Good luck.
I'm relieved. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. Would you say, Zorba, that you had perfect kids if Dee Dee wasn't watching?
That's right. Exactly. That's exactly it. My daughter is here. The other doctor pastor is here watching that, and she's smiling right now from ear to ear, the Cheshire Cat smile.
800-462-7413. Now, what's this, Zorba, about the women's study, which shows apparently that women who are exercising and listening to really loud music are better conditioned than if the music wasn't going on.
Exactly. Women who pump it up with music tend to pump it up with iron. And that's exactly what the study showed, that women often do workouts that are much stronger and much more aggressive if they have loud music going through their ears. You know, and the music going through the ears is through an iPod or an MP3 player. And, I mean, the music might get your toes tapping and your muscles stretching and your biceps going. But the question is, what is that music doing to your ears?
Exactly. Because you work out and I do. And now.
Yeah.
And when that music is going, it's really loud. They don't just play music. They play loud music. Yeah. And by the way, loud music that I can't stand. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, if they played Benny Goodman or Louis Armstrong or Miles Davis, well, I'd really love to hear that while I'm exercising.
Kind of Blue in the workout room, I don't think it's going to work. Versus AC/DC or Tom Petty would be okay with me, or Fish. But you know, there's an age issue also. Young people like young music. Older people don't. It has to do with multitasking.
Right.
There are a number of issues that are involved there. But, I mean, when you go to the symphony, it's often not as loud as a rock concert, right? But the issue, getting back to the pump it up with loud music, has to do with decibels. Once you get above 85 decibels, and I have an iPhone, and I love it. I've got a decibelometer as an app on my
iPhone.
Yes, I do.
You can tell how loud it is?
Yes, I do. And I was just in New York City, and I was down in the subway, and I put it on, and it was 100. I was 100 decibels, which is really, really loud. And the issue is, once you get above 85 decibels, you do damage. So if you pump it up with loud music, you may be good for your workout, but you're not paying attention to your ears. So the answer is loud music, but the loud music shouldn't be super loud. In other words, there's a loudness to music, which is the music itself. But if you pump it up over 85 decibels, it's too loud.
Well, you don't have any control when you go to a public
usually these are this particular study looked at women who liked loud music who spurred them on, and they had it through their earphones. It wasn't through public. We weren't talking about
the
music.
Just on the loudspeaker.
If it blasts too loud in the loudspeaker and you have people in there, you talk to the person in the gym and you say you ought to turn it down. Not everyone likes it that loud, and 9 out of 10 times they'll turn it down, or they'll tell you to get out of the gym. One of the two.
One or the other.
But but getting back, these are really personal music things like the iPhone, the iPhone or the iPod. I think you've got to pay attention to that and say, how loud am I making it, and am I damaging my ears? And this has been an issue all along. And the answer is, if you turn the music down a little bit, it's often the type of music you have and not how loud you're putting it into your ears. And just pay attention and use some good sense in doing that, because if not, you may be pumping up your muscles and turning down your hearing when you get to be the age of 50.
Yeah. 800-462-7413. Toll free. 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a listener in St. Louis. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, first I'd like to tell you that I agree with your study, because my question is actually rather related. I noticed that I sweat excessively all the time, especially when I'm working out and listening to loud music.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I when I'm working, like when I'm actually, you know, talking with people, I sweat. When I'm at school taking notes, I'm sweating. Mm-hmm. And I mean, just any type of area in my life, I sweat. Mm-hmm. And I was actually wondering why and what I can do to combat problems.
So you're a student?
I'm a student, and I work full-time as well.
Oh, that's a heavy load.
Well, student and working in full-time is definitely a heavy load. There's no doubt about it. But on the other hand, lifting heavy loads will cause you to sweat more than sitting.
Yeah, but she sweats other times.
I know. That's exactly it. Are you on any pills, any medicines at all?
No.
No. You said that with a lapse. Had you been on medicines at all?
Of course, like ibuprofen every once in a while.
Right, but you're not on any medicines, because some medicines will make you sweat. Certain medications, for instance, antidepressants can make you sweat, and other pills of that nature can make you sweat. Okay, so you're not on any medications. They do it. This is when did you first notice it? How old were you?
You know, it's been going on for a long time. I remember when I was 15.
Okay,
noticing it.
So in the past, you've had this for a long time. What have you done for it? Anything?
No, just guarded myself with a lot of deodorant and tried to wear light clothing. I mean, just not, nothing, I had no idea if I could even do anything to combat it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When you sweat, are you talking about sweating under your armpits or sweating on your face, on your head, on your body?
On my face, on my body. Mm-hmm. My neck is like a big one.
Okay. People notice it? Do they notice it?
Yes. Yes. That's how I'm known around my friends. They will pour water over their heads and say, oh, look at her.
With friends like that, who needs enemies?
I mean, it's funny, but that's the reason I'm calling.
Uh-huh. I have some suggestions. The reason, by the way, that I mentioned the armpits, mm-hmm. because there's a medication, Drysol, Drysol, and it's sort of a super perspirant, antiperspirant. It's by prescription. It works for sweating of the hands, the feet, under the armpits. It does not work for the rest of the body.
Okay.
Sometimes if people take a beta blocker, that will actually reduce sweating. Now, beta blockers are interesting drugs. They're used for they're originally used for blood pressure. But they also work for in thyroid disease. Certain people who have very high thyroid hormones going through their body, it'll be given for that. They work for migraine headaches. And they often, for some people, work for sweating. And I think I would try that. And the reason is, if other people are noticing it, that's what I mentioned it. It then becomes a social issue. You know,
right.
if you're sweating a little bit when you're doing more work or something on your house, well, that's one thing. But if you're there and all of a sudden you have the sweat response, which for some people, some thought about the sweating is that this is an exaggerated blush reaction. It's like a blush reaction. So
right.
if we stop that from happening with a beta blocker, sometimes we'll stop the sweat. And if there's a flush, we'll stop the flush. So the drug I would recommend is Atenolol, A-T-E-N-O-L-O-L, Atenolol.
Okay.
And they come in 25, 50, and 100 milligram tablets. What I would do is I would start out with a 25 milligram tablet, and I would take half a tablet. You need a doctor's prescription for this. I would try 12 and a half milligrams of Atenolol and see if that worked. And I would gradually up it to up to 50 milligrams to see if that worked for the sweating. And I think I'd see if that does it.
Okay,
that may be your answer for this. But once again, when other people notice it, it then becomes a social issue, especially if you're around people you don't know. Right?
Yes.
You know, then
Well, and especially if people are dumping water over your head because of it.
It's a funny joke, but it's not without its sensitivity, I guess.
Well, you've learned to live with it, obviously, and I think a beta blocker may help you.
Yeah, and good luck.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. And before we get to the recipe, Zorba, let's go to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and play another round of Stump the Doc. Today's contestant is Nikki from St. Louis, Missouri. Nikki writes, Doc Z, for the past few months, whenever I bend down to tie my shoe, pick something up, etc., my nose leaks. Now, this is not a snotty kind of substance, nor does it happen even when I have no congestion. My mother has this problem too, but she claims that after a few months or weeks, it went away as suddenly as it came. I feel this inside my head when I change my sleeping position. Moreover, it causes a pathetic little cough. I have an X-Files-ish hunch that this is brain fluid or some other crazy problem, but cannot confirm this. Can you help me or dispel my theory?
Is this brain fluid? I don't think that this is brain fluid. And what did she say her cough was?
Pathetic.
What is a pathetic cough?
It's
like I guess that's a pathetic cough. You know, I don't think of coughs as pathetic. I think of people as pathetic, but I don't think of coughs that's kind of insulting to people.
Yeah.
I like that. Well, first of all, when she bends over, haven't you ever bent over and liquid comes out of your nose?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Happens to me during allergy season all the time. Oh. I'll bend over and liquid will come out of my nose. Yeah. So it's often inflammation within the nasal cavity. Mm-hmm. There's something called vasomotor rhinitis, a great big word that means it's a nose that's doing too much. It's producing too much liquid in there. And as she said, it's not snot. What she means by that, I'm assuming, is it's not thick, yucky-looking stuff, but it's a liquid. And vasomotor rhinitis, sometimes it's difficult to treat. Things that you can use are an antihistamine or a steroid nasal spray or an antihistamine nasal spray. Most people don't take something for that unless their nose is running all the time. Then they take something because they don't like to have their nose running. Mm-hmm. So my recommendation to her is live with it and keep Kleenex on you at all times, because whenever you bend over, you're going to need it. But that's what it is. It's vasomotor rhinitis. Mm-hmm.
And her brain isn't leaking.
And her brain is not leaking. This is not brain fluid. You do not have a tumor. You will be okay.
If you need Mulder or Scully or Zorba to investigate your lifestyle question, send your email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our recipe is next. Lots more of your calls and some interesting research. Don't forget our medical myth buster later in the hour, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That phone number again is 800-462-7413. You can use that if you have a question for Zorba. People on the line, but a line open for you at 1-800-462-7413. But before we get to the phones, recipe time now, Zorba. And as you know, we sometimes spotlight a past recipe that was a hit amongst our listeners in a segment we call Recipes from the Vault. Today's recipe was not only popular, but the name spurred one of the funniest listener emails of all time.
I remember it now.
You do.
As you said that.
The recipe is named Veggies and Ham Stir Fry, meaning vegetables and the meat ham. Well, perhaps we should have rearranged the order because one of our listeners, you'll remember, wrote in concerned that we were going to deep fry a hamster.
That's right.
Hamster stir fry.
That's right. Veggie and hamster fry.
Right. Veggie and hamster fry. Right. Well, rest assured, no rodents were roasted during that recipe segment. But here again, now that I've got your appetites nice and warmed up, is the recipe for veggies and ham stir fry.
I had more comments on this recipe. Now I remember it was veggie and hamster fry than anything else. I remember that now.
Okay, well, let's do it.
Okay, here we are. 2 cups of chopped carrots and cauliflower medley.
2 cups of chopped carrots and cauliflower medley.
Now, why do you think we call it medley? Why is it a medley of cauliflower
medley
carrots?
Medley is a combination.
Oh, it's a combination.
Fits together nicely.
Oh, that's
a melody.
I never thought about that.
Let's not get back into that.
It's chopped carrots and cauliflower melody, different from the chopped carrots and cauliflower medley.
Medley.
You know something? We'll let the grammar police answer that question.
Well, medley is a combination of things.
Why isn't it a melody? Why isn't it a melody?
Well, melody is da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Tune. Okay, anyway.
Music, but anyway. Okay, so, and you can often buy this in a package.
Yeah,
which
right.
Which is kind of
nice.
Right. You can buy it in a package. Right.
Half a cup of chicken broth.
Low sodium. And it's not just for the salt, but a recent article that I read in Cook's Illustrated, which I love, my favorite magazine of all time, showed that the taste of low-sodium chicken broth is better because they have to put more chicken flavor in it because the salt doesn't disguise it. So low-sodium chicken broth.
You would like that magazine better than Gourmet, right?
Non-existent Gourmet, please.
Anyway.
Which is hit the dust. A teaspoon of cornstarch.
Little tea. cornstarch.
1 tablespoonful of sherry.
Big T sherry.
Yeah, now the sherry should be cooking sherry. You know, there's a sweet sherry that is an after-dinner sherry that I used to have in college. When I was in college, I used to make a gourmet meal. Yeah. I would smoke a pipe and have a little glass of after-dinner sherry, and I would feel like I was, I don't know, someone special and old.
Oh, yeah. You felt like a professor.
I felt like a professor, and now I look like an old professor. But in those days, I felt like one. Anyway, two tablespoonfuls of soy sauce.
2 big tea soy sauce.
Pick your soy sauce right. In other words, do not get the typical supermarket soy sauce that is awful tasting. Get a good tasting soy sauce at an Asian grocery store. If you're going into the supermarket, I happen to like Kikkoman's, but there are a variety of other soy sauces. But I do not like La Choy. I think La Choy soy sauce is awful. It's high salt and tasteless. Mm-hmm. 2 teaspoons of oyster sauce.
2 little tea oyster sauce.
You're going to use a dash of hot pepper sauce, like Tabasco.
Dash of hot pepper sauce.
2 big tablespoons.
Very good.
I said it right.
Very good.
I had to correct myself. Yeah. Tablespoons full. Okay. I'm educable of olive oil.
2 big tea. See, it's easy for me to say olive oil.
Yeah, you see, for the grammar police, I was saying it wrong. I'm not going to say it wrong, but I was saying it wrong. Yeah. 2 tablespoons full of minced fresh ginger.
2 big tea minced fresh ginger.
Now, do you keep your ginger in the freezer?
You know, you said tablespoons that one.
Yeah, I did. Well, you know, I made a mistake. I did it right.
Do
once.
I keep my what?
50-50 is okay. Your ginger in the freezer.
Whenever I have ginger, it's in the freezer.
Oh, gosh.
All right.
What kind of a show is this? But if you keep it in the freezer, it grates easier. I am blushing and sweating. 4 green onions sliced.
4 green onions sliced.
I hope I can get through this recipe. Yes. And 1 cup of smoked low-fat ham thinly sliced.
Cup of smoked low-fat ham thinly sliced.
Pick a good ham. Do not pick ham that has a lot of boiled injection. Pick a good, delicious ham for this particular recipe. Mm-hmm. So, in a large pot of boiling water, salted water, cook the carrots and cauliflower florets, uncovered until slightly tender, about 3 to 4 minutes. And by the way, they now come in bags that you can microwave. I just got one the other day, and it says microwavable bag, so you can do it in the bag. Mm-hmm. You don't even open up the bag, and it has enough moisture to do it. Mm. Drain under cold running water and dry thoroughly. Drying is important. Now, in a small bowl, combine the chicken broth and cornstarch. Stir to dissolve. Blend in the sherry, soy sauce, oyster sauce, and hot pepper sauce, and set that aside. Mm-hmm. Then, in a wok or a large skillet, heat up the olive oil, add ginger, and stir briefly over high heat. Then add the carrot and cauliflower medley or melody, as you wish, and add the sliced green onions. Stir continuously over high heat until the onions are wilted. This takes a very short period of time, people, not very long. Mm-hmm. Pour on the chicken broth mixture, stir it until it bubbles and thickens, and sprinkle with the ham on top. Stir well, and you will have a delicious veggie and ham stir fry.
And you can leave the hamster on that silly wheel
thing. Along with ginger.
Yeah. Again, if there's a recipe you remember but can't find, or there's one you feel deserves an encore performance, let us know what it is, and it might end up being our next Recipe from the Vault. Just send the name of the recipe in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor On Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
Toll free. If you have a question for Zorba, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener now in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
We appreciate that call. How can we help you?
About a month ago, my husband was in an accident and lost 4 fingers on his right hand.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Pretty traumatic.
What kind of accident was it?
It was a farming accident.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The most dangerous profession, I think, in the country.
Yes, farming. Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about it. No doubt about it. I had the pleasure some time ago of actually being on a combine, bringing in corn 12 rows wide, and the farmer who let me do this had lost his small finger. And I said, how'd you do it? He said, well, in the combine. And farmers, when they hang around, they often, their hands, you look at their hands, there's often a digit that's gone.
Yeah.
Right. So after he had the surgery to actually remove his digits, he complained of an immense pain in his fingers that were no longer there. And the doctor described it as phantom pains. And what I'm just kind of wondering, they have gradually gotten better, but he can still feel his fingers. He says that sometimes he can actually try to feel like he's moving them. But most of the time, he says, they usually feel like they're curled up in a little ball in a fist in his hand. And I'm just wondering, is this something that may go away, or what actually causes that sensation of his fingers still being there?
Mm.
Or are there any exercises or anything that we can do to make them less painful?
Yeah, you hear about that too, Zorba, with people who've lost arms or legs.
Yeah, phantom limb pain is... It's an interesting problem. I read the book Into Thin Air, and one of the people who survived lost his hand on one side and part of the hand on the other side, and I saw him at a lecture. And what was most interesting during the lecture is he had been out in the cold in Mount Everest overnight, and he's continuously rubbing his hand to keep it warm, and then you realize about in the middle of the lecture that he's not rubbing his hand, he's rubbing an artificial hand. I mean, his hand doesn't exist anymore. Phantom limb pain. It exists because we have a memory. The memory is maybe it's in the central nervous system somewhere. It's not in the hand. The hand is gone. The theory is it's either in the spinal cord or it's in the brain somewhere. Mm. And for some people, it never goes away. Never, ever, ever. And for other people, they can make it go away. There are medications on the market that help. A drug called gabapentin, G-A-B-A-P-E-N-T-I-N, gabapentin, and another drug called Lyrica. And these are drugs that affect the central nervous system. They're anti-epileptic drugs that are used in chronic pain. And for some people, just taking one dose a day or two doses a day has been reported to reduce the phantom limb pain. So it goes from a negative sensation to a neutral sensation. But for the rest of his life, he may always be able to feel those fingers, even though they're not there, but they may not bother him.
Okay.
May not bother him. Just like, you know, we all have memories that, you know, that were disruptive in our lives, maybe something we did when we were younger or a traumatic event, and we can often house them away, and then sometimes they come up into our brain and we have to deal with them. And for some people, they're right in front of their face all the time, and for others, they're not. But you said now his pain is better. How long has it been since the accident?
About a month. We actually have not actually seen his hand yet. We have an appointment today that they're going to take his cast off.
Well, the fact that it's been a month and it's already decreasing is a very, very good sign. If it had been a year or two and it was still there, that would make it more likely that it would be permanent. But if he's already noticing that the discomfort is more tolerable and that the sensation is changing, that means his brain is going through an active reorganization. We know now the brain has neuroplasticity where it really develops throughout the life space. We used to think it stopped at the age of 5 and it doesn't. So his brain is now developing. There's a really, really good chance that this sensation is going to recede to the back of his brain and become much more tolerable. So good luck to him. I'm sure this is very, very difficult for him.
He's taking it very well. I'm very proud of the way that we're able to handle this.
Mm-hmm. He obviously has resilience. He has resilience. And he has you at his side. Yep. That means a lot, having someone else who cares for him.
Yep.
So.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We appreciate the call. And before the break, Zorba, time for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. On a past show, we were discussing raw milk, and you made a comment that one of our listeners strongly disagreed with. You stated how raw milk is illegal in every single state of the Union. Well, Linda from Wisconsin takes issue with that, writing, "This statement is inaccurate. Each state has its own laws regarding raw milk, and I have personally in the past year purchased raw milk in several states from a retail store shelf. I have purchased raw milk fresh in California, Washington State, as well as Pennsylvania. I do know there are other states where you can purchase it as well, some through a cow or goat share program. And I have been purchasing milk in Wisconsin through a farm share program.
And she's exactly correct. I definitely was wrong when I stated that it was illegal in all states. But the reason that I actually was even discussing raw milk and looking at that is there are dangers involved with raw milk. And the dangers are there. Public health departments are aware of it. There are a group of people who are very interested in having raw milk. And frankly, one of the most important public health measures that came forth at the end of the last century was pasteurizing milk. It was a major step forward in keeping our food supply safe, especially safe for our children. So I was wrong about the legal aspect, but I wasn't wrong, and I still have my stance that I think raw milk is dangerous and has a danger associated with it. And we take risks in our lives. Mm-hmm. We all do dangerous things. When I go outside and I drive my car on a rainy day where the streets are more dangerous than on a sunny day, it's a danger I'm willing to take, and I think this is just one of those issues that is an individual decision that everyone can make.
Yeah, but as we, I think, mentioned when we talked about this the last time, dairy farmers tend to drink raw milk all the time.
Well, some dairy farmers drink raw milk. Actually, a lot of dairy farmers in Wisconsin have a home pasteurizer, and they pasteurize their milk too. I don't know if the word "a lot" is there, but there are some dairy farmers that drink raw milk, but most of those dairy farmers tend to pasteurize their milk with home pasteurization. However, I don't know how many drink raw milk and how many don't. I'm not apprised of those numbers.
Right. But it's not a good idea.
I don't think raw milk is – I have my same stance. I think that raw milk has an element of risk to it, and I think that keeping our food supply safe and safer from all aspects, from E. coli and beef to raw milk to making sure that that spinach and raw veggies are safe also, I think is a major issue because the CDC and the FDA both say that there are too many people who get sick from problems in the food supply, and raw milk to me is a problem.
And that wraps up this edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Send in your rebuttal for our next edition in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Stick around, some interesting research to talk over. More of your calls at our Medical Mythbuster here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again, and we do have an open line. Callers are waiting, but you can get in now at 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, of course, time for another research topic. This time we talk about medical marijuana. More and more states, including, by the way, the one we happen to live in, are at least considering legalizing marijuana for medical purposes.
That's right. There are 12 states right now that have medical marijuana legalized. And one of the issues is that the federal government, which has sort of turned a blind eye to this, even though it's illegal federally, has now said they're not going to prosecute medical marijuana in those states where it's legal, which I think is a major step forward. If you look at society, people say, the majority of the people in most states in the U.S., many of the states, mm-hmm. certainly the populous states, say that they think medical marijuana should be available to treat people with certain diseases. Cancer, perfect example. You may find that medical marijuana increases your appetite if you have cancer. It may be worthwhile for pain. HIV/AIDS, an excellent way to use it. And the reality is people are worried that all of a sudden there's going to be more marijuana around. Well, frankly, you can go to any state in the union and you can go and you can buy medical marijuana. You just have to find a teenager who has it in their house.
Well, that's not medical marijuana. That's just marijuana.
So the reality is the problems with it is how do you regulate it? Well, we regulate things that are dangerous right now. now. We have hydrocodone, we have oxycodone, we have the fentanyl patch, we have narcotics, we have rules to regulate them to get them into the right hands.
Yeah, but it's different with something you can grow and smoke. That's different than going to the drugstore and getting a prescription.
Well, you would have to go to a store that's regulated, and every state will decide
how
it's regulated.
You can grow it in your backyard. Yeah.
Well,
if you want
it's a function.
And that's
of
not
what
regulated.
It's
when you're growing it in your backyard, it's not regulated.
You are correct. It's a function of what each state decides to do. So state A may say, we don't want you to grow it in your yard. We're going to certify the growers and we're going to regulate it very carefully. And state B may say, we don't care if you grow it in your backyard. We're not going to prosecute you. And it's the decriminalization of marijuana that's an issue. But that's separate from medical marijuana for people who need it. If you have cancer and you're dying and something will be worthwhile to get you out of your cancer pain, you should have access to those drugs.
No argument. But you know that these, in quotes, medical marijuana stores in the states where it's legal, that's a joke. You can get it in the store whether you need it or whether you
don't. Well, no. The reality is every state is different. If you take the state of California where the laws are more liberal and the enforcement is more liberal, it's different than other states. So the reality is it should be legal. And then each state should decide how they're going to regulate it, just like they regulate alcohol, just like they regulate narcotics, just like they regulate other dangerous things. Make it legal, regulate it so people can get it if they need it.
Our phone number is 800-462-7413, 1-800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba, in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hello.
Hello, Tom. How are you doing?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I want Dr. Zorba to dispel an old wives' tale for me or to prove it correctly so I can get justified. But I love things that are very pungent, onions, garlic, curry. And I heard a long time ago, the old wives' tale, that anything bad for your breath is good for your heart. It's a great antioxidant. So I want to tell my girlfriend and all my family that, hey, leave me alone. I'm healthy.
That's a great thing to believe.
Bad for the breath, good for the heart.
Yeah,
I love it.
I love it.
I love it. And, of course, that's not true. It's not true. Bad for the breath is not necessarily good for the heart. But now garlic is a good example. Garlic is wonderful. I cannot imagine a civilization without garlic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love garlic and I like garlic. However, if you listen to the late night radio, as I sometimes do on the AM dial, there are garlic pills that people take and, you know, concentrated garlic.
We talked about
garlic.
That on a recent show that they have a study, apparently, that shows that garlic is healthy for you.
Yeah, and garlic may be healthy. And whether or not it actually reduces heart disease and whether or not it reduces cancer, it's never been proven to do that. Mm-hmm. And people will say, well, there are benefits to garlic, and they treat it as a supplement. But I think that good food that's tasty and that's delicious is healthful because we may eat less of it. I mean, that's my theory now. My theory now is Michael Pollan, a great author, wrote a book called The Botany of Desire and The Omnivore's Dilemma. And I listened to him speak about a couple of months ago. And he said, eat the foods you like in the amount that you're no longer hungry. And I think that's a very good concept. And I think food in America has become tasteless for the most part. So we eat these large quantities to satisfy our appetite because the food doesn't taste very good. And if garlic makes food taste better for you so your weight is down and you feel really good, then it is good for your health. So the old wives' tale is right, but it's what's good for the taste buds is good for the heart.
So there's nothing about onions that's good for you at all, except being a vegetable?
Nope, except for being a vegetable. Sorry. Yeah,
I'm still going to eat bunches of it. So.
And you're healthy, right? Are you a healthy guy?
I am pretty healthy. I'm 6 foot and about 200 pounds. Just a little bit in the middle, but other than that, I've been doing great.
Yeah, that's good. Well, keep up. Onions are great. Garlic is great. But yes, you can't tell them I'm going to keep on eating it because it's better. But enjoy your food.
Well, it's a good thing my girlfriend doesn't listen to NPR because I'm gonna lie to her. I'm just going to tell her, Dr. Zorba said it's good.
Okay, you can get away with it then.
Have a great day.
You too.
And thanks for the call at 800-462-7413. Time now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. And today's myth deals with cold remedies. I think all of us can remember getting the advice that the best way to fight off a cold is to get some rest. But is there any truth to this?
Absolutely. There's absolutely lots of truth to this. And America, you are sleep deprived. That's the whole issue. You know, here it is. We go to the gym to get our bodies in shape. Mm-hmm. We want to eat the nutritious meals to make sure we get, you know, we're eating the right food. We go to the doctor and we take our pills if we have diabetes or heart disease or so on. And then we go home and get 6 hours of sleep. Mm-hmm. This is dumb. This is stupid. We need to get 7 to 8 hours of sleep. And there's evidence that people who sleep more have a better immune system and are more likely to fight off a cold. They sleep more and they think better and they weigh less. There's no evidence that sleeping more is good for your weight. And that's, of course, good for, you know, for your body. Hmm. But so the answer is yes.
Fewer colds if we sleep
absolutely,
more.
Absolutely. Now, it's not true that close that window because you'll get a draft and that will give you a cold or pneumonia. That's the wives' tale. But the reality is it's not a myth that if you sleep more, you're less likely to get a cold. It is the truth.
Yeah, didn't they do a study years and years and years ago where they had people sitting on blocks of ice?
That's right. That's right.
And other
blocks
people
of ice
who didn't,
with fans
and there was no greater cold.
What happened is they took a bunch of college students, put their feet in cold water, they sat on blocks of ice, and then they put fans on them with wind, and other people who were just, you know, didn't do that, and they both got the same numbers of colds. That's exactly it. So get your sleep. Mom was right.
If there's a myth you'd like Zorba to bust, just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And here's a listener now, Zorba, in Kirkwood, Missouri. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
What's up is this. I feel like I'm devoting my life to exercise lately, and I'm trying to figure out if there's something in here I should be cutting out. I'm going to be 80 years old in 4 days, and here's what I do every week. It seems so silly. I do the walking, the treadmill at the Y every day, 30 minutes a day, 6 days a week only. I give myself Saturday off. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I do 8 weight machines. It doesn't take a long time, but you know, it's another little effort thing. On Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday, I'm up to 15 minutes on the elliptical trainer, which I do. And on Monday and Friday, I also do an arthritis swim class, which is just, you know, old ladies in a pool moving around trying to keep moving. But it seems like such a lot of time involved. Plus, some people will say, oh, well, you should increase this, you should increase that. And I look at them and say, I'm not training for a marathon.
Yeah. Well,
because I'm not. I'm just trying to stay alive a little bit so I can walk around and visit and whatever.
Is any of this exercise painful to you, or is any of it that you wish you weren't doing?
Not particularly. I'm a little cautious about the weight machines when I lift up, because you hear all these stories about rotator cuff, and I think, just don't strain, so I just stick with 10 pounds and don't try to increase weight, for instance. The elliptical trainer, my doctor's been pushing for 2 years now, and finally, about 2 months ago, I tried it, and that doesn't hurt. You know, it seems to be a lot of exercise because you're going back and forth with your arms and your feet are going around, and I sort of sing to myself while I'm on it to keep going.
The elliptical, by the way, is great. You've got a great exercise program. And I have to tell you something interesting. We listen to voices all the time. We listen to them on the phone. We listen to them on the radio all the time. And I like listening to the tenor of people's voices and then trying to guess what their age is. Mm-hmm. And the reason is sometimes you guess people are older or younger from their voices, and it has to do with how much air is exhaled. It has to do with the tremor in their voice and a few other things. And we make a lot of judgments right away with a voice. And you don't sound 80 because you have more energy in your voice.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty funny because I have asthma.
But it's what you're doing on a regular basis. And what happens is, you know, think about it. Look at young kids. They're out there. They're moving all around. You look at teenagers. You know, they're on the soccer field or they're playing their sport. You look at people in their 20s and 30s. They're out moving around. And as we get older, we move less and less. And as a result, we have to actually, to maintain our health, try to move more and more. And Tom knows this because he recently started an exercise program. And that's what he thinks about day and night. Exercise, exercise, exercise. But he has noticed, you've noticed a major difference in how you feel now that you exercise. So do you feel like you're spending too much time in the gym? Or
I just feel like I'm devoting my life to it because every day it's like, okay, When can I work this in?
Well, you are devoting your life to it. There's no doubt about it. However, you are getting the benefits of it. You have asthma, so you've got medical problems, and and a slew of medications, I would keep it up.
So it sounds like a reasonable program to you?
It doesn't only sound reasonable, it sounds optimal.
Really?
Yes.
Do I have to walk fast on the treadmill?
The goal when you're on a treadmill is to feel like you're sweating and to sweat a bit. That's what it is. Don't judge it by your heart rate. Judge it about whether or not you're sweating.
I beat a little.
Beating
my grandmother taught me that nice ladies don't sweat, you know. We just beat a little. So when I beat a little, I think, oh, dear, dear.
That's exactly right. Beat away and keep up your program. It's dynamite.
Is it really?
Yes.
Well, I thank you so much. So then I'll keep at it and I'll be more cheerful about it.
And by the way, a happy birthday to you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yes, happy birthday.
It's
happy
kind
birthday.
Of a big one, isn't it? I don't know how I got here.
Keep on exercising, and thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Before we check out for the week, Zorba, you'll have to pay a fine to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police. This citation comes to us from an anonymous deputy from Waterloo, Wisconsin, who has his or her tongue planted firmly in cheek. Greetings and salutations, congratulations and kudos to you, yourself, from the Department of Redundancy Department. By frequently, quite often, using the phrase cheap and inexpensive, you are reinforcing once again that unnecessary words, which are not needed, have a place and a home on the public radio airwaves. Most normal, average people would consider that you, Dr. Zorba, would be differentiating between the two words, implying or indicating, as it were, that cheap carried a negative connotation or bad reference of being shoddily made, and inexpensive carried a better, more positive meaning of costing less. However, we, that is those of us here at the Department of Redundancy Department, realize and understand that you yourself are promoting and endorsing the use of multiple modifiers which mean the same thing and are identical. Yes, we agree that either cheap or inexpensive would suffice and serve the purpose nicely, but when you use one, why not use the other also too?
I got it.
So no more cheap and inexpensive?
No, that was great and wonderful. Great and wonderful email. Thank you.
And if you'd like to join the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police, send your email to
Zorba, that's Zorba, at WPR, at WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Take care, Tom.
Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rocky and Bullwinkle, also known as Adam Friedrich and Brad Kohlberg, are the two guys responsible for this hour. Does that make us Boris and Natasha?
Oh, I hope not.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich, and our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba, Natasha, Pastor, I'm Tom Boris Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1009Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.